So I have just written down the outline for the remaining two lectures. So today I will talk about Green's function for diffusion equation and the heat kernel. Then I will talk about Laplace and Poisson equations, then Green's functions for Laplace operator. And I will dwell upon the boundary value problems and the method of images. Tomorrow, I will talk about Green's functions for wave equation and Maxwell's equation and retarded potentials, mainly how to use the Green's function technique to solve Maxwell's equation with external sources. So let's start. Let's start with the simplest, probably, example of partial differential equations, namely heat or diffusion. Those terms are used interchangeably, equations. We first consider the homogeneous equation. So heat in brackets diffusion equation and heat kernel. You will see in a moment what heat kernel is. So consider equation that looks like this, d phi over dt as a function of x and t. X is the vector in d-dimensional space. We consider this system in arbitrary number of dimensions, and our field will be the function of both coordinates and time, equal to kappa Laplace operator number squared phi of x and t. Yeah. So how to solve this equation? So since we have constant coefficients, before all derivatives, we will use the Fourier transform. And we Fourier transform in both coordinate and time. But before we do this, we must specify the initial conditions. So this equation is subject to the following initial conditions. Phi at the moment of time equal to 0 is equal to some function u naught that is in general the function of coordinates only. The function u naught is supposed to be Fourier expandable. It's supposed to be smooth. It's supposed to decay at infinity fast enough. So we can Fourier transform both phi and u naught. Let's do this. We Fourier transform phi of x, comma t in, yeah, we Fourier transform actually here in coordinate space only at this moment. So we have the integral over the whole space, phi of as a function of wave vector and t, e in power minus a k dot x dk over 2 pi in power d. And do the same for u naught of x. Integral over the whole space, u naught of k, e minus I k dot x dk divided by 2 pi in power d. So we're solving homogeneous equations. So we will Fourier transform in coordinate space only, but keep original time dependence for the Fourier transform components. So phi of wave vector comma t is the function of wave vector and time. Our intention is to obtain the differential equation for functions phi of k and t. So if we substitute into our original equation, we are going to have a d phi of k comma t over dt is equal to minus kappa k squared phi a comma t. So this is a very simple differential equation with respect to each Fourier component that depends on k, and its solution is, so as a result, we have that phi of k comma t is equal to phi k at the moment of time t equal to 0 times exponent e minus kappa k squared t. But when t is equal to 0, we have that all Fourier component phi as a function of k are equal to just u naught of k. So we can write that this is equal to u naught of k e in power minus kappa k squared t. Right? Right. So to recover our original function that depends on both space and time, we have to do the inverse Fourier transform. Phi of x comma t is equal to integral over the whole space, u naught of k, e in power minus I k dot x times e in power minus kappa k squared t. So we, in principle, the problem is solved, but what we can do in addition to this, we can substitute instead of u naught as a function of k, the direct Fourier transform. Namely, we just write the original integral. So here dk, of course, over 2 pi in power d, not 2 pi. So we will have the integral over k space and substitute here the direct Fourier transform of our function u naught. Integral over coordinate space, u naught as a function of xi, e in power I k dot xi, d xi, right? This is nothing else than u naught of k. And here we have e in power minus I k dot x minus kappa k squared t dk over 2 pi in power d. So we now see that we can straightforwardly take the integral over dk. So we will use the Gaussian integral we considered on the previous lecture. So it's quite a straightforward exercise. I will just write down what we should do using the integral that from minus infinity to plus infinity dk over 2 pi e in power minus a k squared plus e b k equal to e in power minus b squared over 4 a 1 over square root of 4 pi over a. So if we use this integral and apply it to every component of k of wave vector, we will obtain the following final answer for our field, that it is equal to the integral over xi of the following construction: 1 over 4 pi kappa t in power d over 2 exponent minus 1 over 4 kappa t x minus xi squared, so times u naught of xi d xi. So what stands before U naught of Xa is labeled as K as a function of X minus Xa, comma T, and cold heat kernel. This is what people call heat kernel. So we obtained the full solution to heat equation that is subject to simple initial conditions. Why this construction called heat kernel is important? Because it will enter the expression for the Green's function as well that we are going to consider next. Any questions? So before we move forward, let me mention that this heat kernel possesses a very interesting so-called semi-group property. So note property of K as a function of X minus Xi, comma T. This property is very simple and can be checked explicitly. K of X minus Xi, comma T1 plus T2 is just an integral over coordinate space K X minus eta, vector eta, comma, T1 times K eta minus psi, comma, T, here better to say T2 and here T1, integral over the eta. So this is just the relation that relates the heat kernel at subsequent moment of time through the heat kernels at the previous moment. And this can be just checked explicitly. Okay, what we're going to do next? We are going to consider the inhomogeneous heat equation. Now we assume that something stands on the right. So that, or better to say, that we have some external source. And to solve the problem in the presence of external source, we need the formula for the Green's function. So let's consider the topic causal Green's function for heat or diffusion differential operator. Okay, so how Green's function is defined? We have operator d over dt minus kappa nabla squared as before, acting on x coordinate. And here we have the Green's function. It will be the function of both, in general, two space coordinates and two times. We will have x minus xi, comma t minus tau equal to delta x minus xi, delta t minus tau. So again, since our operator has the coefficients before derivatives that are just constant, we assume absolutely correctly that the Green's function is the function of differences of x and psi and t and tau. So, and to determine this Green's function, we have to make the Fourier expansion in both frequency and wave vectors. So Fourier transform and I will again write g x minus psi t minus tau and delta x minus psi times delta t minus tau. I will write this way equal to the integral over wave vectors of the over a space of wave vectors, then over time from minus infinity to infinity, sorry, frequency from minus infinity to infinity, it's not time, d k over 2 pi in power d, d omega divided by 2 pi, and here g as a function of k and omega, and for delta functions, we put simply 1. E in power minus I k x minus psi. E in power minus I omega t minus tau. So, and substitute those Fourier transforms in our equation. And we're going to get upon substitution a very simple equation. Upon substitution, we get minus I omega plus kappa k squared g k comma omega is equal to 1. Meaning that g of k comma omega is equal to 1 over minus I omega plus kappa k squared. So to determine our original Green's function, the function of x minus psi and t minus tau, we have to plug this expression back into the formula for the Green's function in coordinate space. So g of x minus psi comma t minus tau equal to the integral over dk to pi in power d, d omega over 2 pi, 1 over minus I omega plus kappa k squared, e in power minus I k x minus psi times e minus I omega t minus tau. Right? And over frequency from minus infinity to plus infinity. And what we see here, what do we see here? We see that we can straightforwardly take the integral over omega. So the expression for the Fourier transformed Green's function there is very simple. And we observe that there is only one pole here, omega equal to minus I kappa k squared. And it lies in the lower plane. So we already encountered similar situation yesterday when we considered causal Green's functions for the displacement of harmonic oscillator. So this means if tau minus, sorry, if t minus tau is negative, then we have to close the contour in the upper plane where there is no poles. There is no pole. And we automatically get 0. So we have the situation is that due to the presence of the first-time derivative in the heat equation, the Green's function automatically has causal structure. You see, we don't have to worry about causality because it is automatic. So, but when T minus tau is greater than zero, we have to close the contour in the lower plane and we'll get the non-zero result. So taking integral over frequency, we have theta function T minus tau. And the remaining integral over wave vectors, dA over 2 pi n power d, e n power minus kappa k squared, t minus tau, n power minus ik, x minus xi. And we already saw this integral here. The integral over k in our expression for the Green's function is exactly the same integral we computed here and obtained the heat kernel. Yeah.
Could you explain a little bit more why if t is smaller than tau, then you have to take on the upper plane?
So if t is smaller than tau, then this is negative. Mm-hmm. So this is a negative, meaning that minus I times T minus tau is positive. Okay, so in the plane of complex frequencies. So in order for the exponent to decay at infinity, we have to close the contour in the plane that ensures that the real part and the exponent is negative. So it's just simply, so if we have the expression I omega say A and A is greater than zero, then zero, then and omega is equal to omega prime plus I omega double prime in the complex plane, that we must only work in the half plane where the imaginary part of omega will render the positive, sorry, the negative real part under the exponent. Understand? So, yeah. Yeah. So, but when T minus tau is greater than zero, then for the same reasons, we have to close the contour in the lower plane. So, okay, let me move this board up. So as a result, we have the final expression g of x minus xi, comma t minus tau equal to theta function, theta t minus tau, k x minus xi, comma t minus tau, where the expression for k is given here. So any questions? I will make just one more comment. So, yeah. Okay. Very, very good. The initial conditions. You mean when we impose initial kind of conditions on the field, not on the Green's function. So the Green's functions is defined when we have delta functions. Yeah, there. So we assume that the expression is valid over the whole space and time. So, and so for following your question, we can now solve, or better say write down the solution for the full inhomogeneous problem, subject to initial conditions. So we assume that the source term, so when we talk about initial conditions, we typically choose the moment time equal to zero, and assume that the source term also starts acting at time t equal to 0. We have initial distribution at t equal to 0. And assume that in addition to our initial distribution, source simply kicks in at time t equal to 0. In this case, we can write down the solution that is simply a linear combination of the solution that contains Green's function and the solution that we have obtained for homogeneous equation. Yeah, questions, guys? No? Okay. Okay, so note. If phi of x comma t is subject to initial condition not of x at t equal to 0, and the source term f of x t such that f of x comma t is equal to 0 for t smaller than 0, then the general solution phi of x comma t will be equal to the sum of the solution we obtained there, k of x minus psi t u naught of psi d psi plus integral again over psi. And here the integral from 0 to time of interest t, since for negative times the source doesn't act, over d tau k x minus psi comma t minus tau f psi tau. So this is the most general solution to the heat or diffusion equation with the non-zero right-hand side. So general solution to d phi over x of t over dt minus kappa. Yeah, kappa. Let me just check one. Yeah, kappa. Kappa nabla squared phi of x comma t equal to f of x comma t. Okay, any questions at this point? So if there are no questions, then I should say that we are done with this simple example of parabolic differential equations, namely heat equation, and we're going to move to our next topic and consider Laplace and Poisson equations. Okay, topic, Laplace, in brackets, Poisson equations. So, well, Laplace equation is the particular case of a Poisson equation, when in the Poisson equation we set the source at the right-hand side equal to zero, we recover just Laplace equation. So it is written in the following form. Nabla squared phi of x, and we, again, at this point, can see the x to be a d-dimensional vector equal to f of x. So this is Poisson and Laplace if f equal to zero. So typically those equations are considered either in the infinite space or in the finite space that lie within some boundary. So say there is a space of interest where we have to find the solution to one of those equations, either Laplace or Poisson. The space is labeled by large omega, and the boundary is labeled by d omega. And we assume that the form of the boundary is known, and at every point we can draw the normal n to the boundary. So we must specify the boundary conditions. And as I mentioned at the end of the previous lecture, we can write boundary conditions. Phi of x equal to some function g of x, x belonging to the boundary. And this is the Dirichlet boundary condition. Or we can imagine that we know the derivative of the field at the boundary, namely the derivative in the direction normal to the boundary. So n dot nabla phi of x equal to g of x, x belonging to the omega. So this is the Neumann boundary condition. Let me just move it up so that all of you could see what I have written on the board. A function satisfying Laplace equation, nabla squared phi of x equal to zero, is called harmonic. Harmonic function. Again, I don't know why if we have some function that satisfies Laplace equation, we speak about harmonic functions. I cannot tie this term, this terminology to anything. So what it does anyone know? Probably. But I don't know. Yeah. So Laplace equation, so in spherical coordinates, it uses for its solution spherical harmonics, right? Yeah. So what we're going to do now, we consider three theorems that are related to Laplace and Poisson equations. So some theorems. Theorem one. For Dirichlet in brackets Neumann. Boundary conditions the solution in the region of interest omega is uniquely for Dirichlet. And up to a constant for Neumann boundary conditions, determined by the value or the derivative of the function on the boundary by g of x on d omega. So for Dirichlet, the solution is uniquely determined by the value of the function at the boundary, and for Neumann boundary conditions, so such a solution is determined up to a constant. So let's prove it for Neumann boundary conditions, and the proof is quite simple. Okay, proof. Well, to prove your uniqueness, we have to assume that there are two functions that are in general different but satisfy the same boundary conditions and the same equation. Suppose there are two harmonic functions. Phi 1 and phi 2. They satisfy, they are both equal to g at x and both satisfy the Laplace equation. So if we want to prove for Neumann boundary conditions, then we have to assume, so for Neumann, both normal derivatives and dot nabla phi 1 equal to n nabla phi 2 equal to g on the boundary. So then we conclude that their difference chi equal to phi 1 minus phi 2 is harmonic as well and satisfies the condition n dot nabla chi is equal to zero on the boundary. So what we are going to do next, we're going to employ quite already known to you identity, Lagrange's identity. Or better to simply integration by parts. So let's consider the following integral over volume omega. Integral of nabla chi squared dx. And to use the Gauss's theorem to transform the integral over volume into the integral over the boundary. So it is equal to the integral of nabla dot nabla chi dx. So but we first here integrate just simply One second. Yeah, integral. Oh, no, no, sorry, I missed something. I missed chi here. Sorry. Here it is squared. Nabla chi squared. And we simply do the integration by parts. We write nabla acting on chi nabla chi minus integral over volume chi nabla squared chi dx. We simply plot in the just here. I wouldn't say even integration by parts, but simply we rewrote nabla chi squared in this way. But nabla squared chi is equal to zero, right? Because chi is a harmonic function, and we're left only with this term that we, in its turn, transform using the Gauss's theorem as an integral over volume into the integral over the boundaries. So it will be equal to integral over the boundaries out of chi n dot nabla. So when we transform in this form, then this is the total divergence, and we must have n dot nabla. N dot nabla chi ds. So in order for the right-hand side here and the left-hand side to be consistent, and we have the condition that n dot nabla chi is equal to zero, so this is zero, so we must have also this is equal to zero, then in this case, the only conclusion we can make is this chi is some simple constant. It's just a constant independent of coordinates. So the proof for Dirichlet boundary conditions follows the same step. So for Dirichlet boundary conditions, chi is equal to zero here, and hence this is the full square of some real function, then chi must be equal to zero once we have Dirichlet boundary conditions. So theorem two. Theorem two for a solution. Of the Poisson equation. Minus nabla squared phi squared equal to f subject, and this is very important, to Neumann boundary conditions to exist . So the fact that we're dealing with Neumann boundary conditions is important. So for a solution of the Poisson equation subject to Neumann boundary conditions to exist, we must have the Fredholm. But better just to say this is the wrong wording. G of x must satisfy by the Fredholm constraint. integral over the boundary, so g of x ds plus integral over the volume omega f of dx equal to 0. So when I write the integral over ds, I imply the integral. So ds is the infinitesimal area belonging to the boundary. So this is ds. So to avoid any confusion, so especially when I transformed the integral over volume into the integral over the surface, so ds is the infinitesimal element of the surface itself. Ds and n is the normal vector to this infinitesimal element. Well, the proof is also simple. So proof. We write integral over omega of nabla squared phi dx. And again, here we directly use the Gauss's theorem, transforming it into the integral over encompassing surface n dot nabla phi ds. And since n dot nabla phi is equal to g of x at the surface, and this is equal to minus f of x, right? Then our Fredholm constraint follows to just straightforward. Finally, theorem three. Theorem three. That is probably the most important one. Theorem three. Laplace operator. Operator L equal to minus, and we put nabla squared, is self-adjoint. With respect to, just simply, is self-adjoint. So to prove this theorem, we have to recall the definition of this self-adjoint operator. We have to recall the material from the first lecture and to consider the following construction. So proof. So it follows from the so-called Green's identity. Again, we encountered the name Green from Green's identity. Green's identity. So we consider the integral over the volume of the following construction, phi. Well, let's assume for generality that it acts in the space of complex functions, but of course it is not necessary at all. So phi star operator minus nabla squared chi minus chi minus nabla squared acting on phi star dx. So what stands here, if you recall the notations from the previous lectures, is simply the difference of phi comma L chi minus L acting on phi L dagger chi. So what we hope to achieve by considering this difference, we hope to achieve that we can transform what stands here as an integral over the boundary. And this will complete our proof of self-adjointness. So here nabla squared, and here the same operator nabla squared. So L is equal to L dagger. So, and we will try to work with this expression in such a way that at the right-hand side, we arrive at the integral of the boundary only. That's all. So we write this as equal to minus integral over omega nabla phi star nabla chi minus chi nabla phi star dx. And simply apply again the Gauss's theorem. Here, nabla acts on the whole expression, and we can use the Gauss's theorem to transform the integral over volume into the integral over boundary, minus integral over boundary d omega phi nabla chi minus chi nabla phi star ds. So when I mentioned the term Green's identity, then I meant that the Green's identity is this one, that this expression is equal to this expression. This identity is also named after mathematician Andrew Green. So any questions? So why is this theorem important that L is self-adjoint? Because it allows us to construct the Green's function, to use the eigenvalue expansion, and to obtain the expression for the Green's functions that will be symmetric, that will obey the symmetry between its two arguments in a closed way, in the closed form. Okay, our next topic. Green's function of Laplace operator L equal to minus nabla squared. So I will use the notation in which there will be always the minus sign before nabla squared. So determine g of x, x prime, satisfying g, satisfying the equation, minus nabla squared g x comma x prime equal to delta x minus x prime. Again, we will obtain that the Green's function will depend on the difference of x and x prime. So, but before we proceed, I will make the following just oral comment. Well, I don't have time to discuss how one can solve simply Laplace equations for arbitrary boundary or in the infinite space. But I should mention that the best way to do this is to use the method of separation of variables. The method of separation of variables, and this is successfully done, given that we have the volume that has just good enough shape, obeying some kind of a symmetry, for example, a sphere, a cylinder, or a cube, or some combinations. So, but we don't have, of course, time to consider those things. There is enough amount of time that is devoted in the courses on mathematical physics to discussing solutions of the Laplace equation for a variety of settings, variety of initial conditions, and variety of boundaries. Okay, so let's consider the Green's function. So nabla acts as usual on variable x, and here we must, for the closed volume, impose boundary conditions on the Green's function itself. So in general, g of x comma x prime must obey the corresponding boundary conditions. If we consider infinite space, then g will be the function of x minus x prime. So what we are going to do, we're going to consider just the infinite space and determine the Green's functions for the infinite space. So, and since Laplace operator is self-adjoint, we can use the eigenfunction expansion. So use eigenfunctions expansion. G x comma x prime equal to sum over the index that labels eigenvalues and eigenfunctions, phi n of x, phi n of x prime divided by lambda n. So if there are, so if we consider the Green's functions for the infinite space for entire space in power d, what can we say about eigenvalues of Laplace operator? What is the variable that classifies them? Can you all tell? Just for the entire space. Can anyone guess or suggest? If we have the entire space and consider the Laplace operator, what can we think about? What kind of quantity or variable we can think that will classify or distinguish between all lambda n's? Oh, absolutely, yeah. Exactly, yeah. for the entire space, lambda will have momentum index, a wave vector. Lambda k equal to k squared. That's all. And eigenfunctions will also be the functions of just momentum. And I will put them as subscripts, albeit I could easily put them like in the Fourier transform. Phi k equal 2 e in power I k dot x. So that's all. One can easily check. So here star. Here it is important, right? Well, of course, we could consider cosines and sines, but that's not principled. This is much more convenient. So those eigenfunctions form the complete set. They satisfy the delta functional property. So f phi k of x, right, equal to just e in power I k dot f. And we substitute those expressions there. And get the following expression, g of x, x prime. And in this case, it will be x minus x prime will be equal to dk over 2 pi in power d e I k dot x minus x prime divided by k squared. The question is how to compute this integral in arbitrary dimension. Well, first of all, you can understand, looking at the integral, that for d equal to 1, the integral will diverge. But let me ask you the following question. Do we really need Green's function to solve an homogeneous equation when d equal to 1? It will be just the second derivative d squared over dx squared, and acting on phi equal to something standing in the right-hand side. So for d equal to 1, we even don't need the concept of the Green's functions to solve either Laplace or Poisson equations. The solution is simple, I would say even trivial. So for d equal to 2, this method is inapplicable as well. Because, we'll encounter logarithmic divergence, so there will be subtleties. So we will calculate g of x minus x prime for d greater than 2. And use the trick that is called Schwinger's trick. The trick, I should say, is very, very beautiful, but from my point of view, also very logical. Okay, what we do, we will lift k squared from the numerator into the exponent. Namely, we will write g of x minus x prime equal to integral over some auxiliary variable s, here dk divided by 2 pi in power d, e I k dot x minus x prime, e in power minus s k squared. But what do we encounter? We encounter d-dimensional Gaussian integral that we used 3 times before. So we can straightforwardly integrate over k. And we will be left with only one integral over S. So integral from 0 to infinity over ds. And here we have square root of pi divided by s, all this in power d, 1 over 2 pi power d. And here we have e in power minus x prime squared divided by 4s. We have simply done the d-dimensional Gaussian integrations.
Mm-hmm. How did you change 1 over t squared the exponential minus s to square?
So if you take the integral over s here, then you will write in the, you will obtain 1 over k squared. So if you take the integral over s, you will recover the expression written above. So, and here what we will do, we will use the substitution t equal to 1 over s. And get as a result the following expression, that this is equal to 1 over 2 in power d pi d over 2 integral from 0 to infinity dt times t in power d over 2 minus 2 e in power minus t x minus x prime squared divided by 4. Then, starting from this, so what can anyone tell me what this integral resembles to you? Or, gamma function, right. Gamma function. We just want to make one more rescaling t going to t in times 4 divided by x minus x prime squared, just rescaling, and introducing gamma function, arrive at our final result, 1 over 2 in power d pi d over 2 times gamma function of d over 2 minus 1 times t divided by x minus x prime squared in power d over 2 minus 1. So when d is equal to 3, we encounter the probably familiar result, familiar from the theory of electromagnetism, or where you applied Gauss's theorem for the spherically symmetric problem to solve the equations that determine so potential distribution in the presence of charges g x minus x prime equal to 1 over 4 pi x minus x prime, absolute value. So very, very, very good. Just a couple of notes. The first note, note one, the result above is inapplicable is inapplicable for d equal to 2. That's completely clear, because if you take the limit d going to 2 in the gamma function, you will immediately encounter the pole. Say d is equal to 2 plus epsilon. So this gamma function will result in the pole, 1 over epsilon. But at the same time, you have d over 2 minus 1 here. And you also make a formal expansion having epsilon here. And when you formally do this, you will encounter logarithm of x minus x prime. So Green's function can be determined also for the two-dimensional case from Gauss's theorem. But not using this trick. So in this case, for d equal to 2, g of x minus x prime is equal to minus 1 over 2 pi log x minus x prime. But is in general defined up to a constant. Up to a constant. This is the consequence of this is that the problems in two-dimensional electrodynamics, they are not as well posed as the problems in three-dimensional electrodynamics. So, and note two. Well, to solve the Poisson equation, that is nothing else than one of the Maxwell's equation, to solve minus nabla squared phi of x equal to 4 pi rho of x, where rho of x is the charge distribution. We use the method of Green's function and write phi of x equal to the integral over the whole space, g of x minus x prime times 4 pi rho of x prime dx prime. Well, this is in three dimensions. We will take the advantage that we have already computed the Green's function and plug Green's function into this expression and get integral over the whole space, rho of x prime dx prime divided by x minus x prime, right, 4 pi cancels, and we have this solution for the potential in the presence of given charge distribution. So if we have the point like charge, so if rho of x prime is equal to E times delta function of x prime, basically we have charge E at the origin, then very, very, very nice. We recover the famous Coulomb's law, phi of x equal to E divided by x. Coulomb's law. So very, very nice, very, very nice. So the conclusion is that it is always useful to have expression for a Green's function. So any questions? And I will consider just one last thing. I won't have time to consider everything, so everything is in my lecture notes, but I will just consider one more thing. Questions at this point? No. Now, if no, then I will consider how to formally obtain the solutions if you have the distribution of charges in the bulk in volume omega and given potential at the boundary. It will take probably 10 more minutes for me. So boundary value problems. Boundary value problems. So wish to solve. Wish to solve the Poisson this time equation. Minus Nabla squared actor of phi equal to f of x, while x belonging to the volume with phi of x equal to g of x with x belonging to the boundary. So and, well, in general, of course, for an arbitrary volume, for an arbitrary space volume, this problem is complicated. But once we found the Green's function, we have the solution. So suppose we have found g of x comma x prime. So g depends on both x and x prime, but is symmetric with respect to the interchange of these variables because Laplace operator is self-adjoint. Found that is also equal to g of x prime comma x. That obeys the equation. Minus Laplace squared acting on x variables, acting on g x comma x prime. Equal to delta of x minus x prime. And both x and x prime belonging to the volume. And satisfying the condition g of x comma x prime equal to zero when x belongs to the boundary. So basically we have the volume. Here at some point x prime, x can be anywhere in the volume or at the boundary, say x is at the boundary, that there is a normal to the boundary. This is the boundary d omega. This is the volume omega. And at the boundary, at d omega, g of x comma x prime equal to zero. Well, the solution to this problem is in general not simple, but we can always pose the problem that in such a way, the problem that determines Green's function itself. But suppose that we somehow obtained or guessed the solution. In this case, if we know the expression for the Green's function, we can use Lagrange's identity to extract the formula for the potential. So Lagrange's identity. We have this construction, integral over volume dx, and here gx comma x prime nabla acting on x, nabla squared acting on x, phi of x minus phi of x delta x prime g x comma x prime equal to integral over the omega. I will write it this way, over the surface and times vector n dot acting on the following construction, g x comma x prime nabla acting on x phi of x minus phi of x nabla x acting on g x comma x prime. So nabla is a vector, n is a vector as well. We have the dot product. Is this more clear? How one can make the transformation? This is very similar to what I have just erased. And we just plug what we have. So this is nabla squared acting on phi. This is minus. So did they put, one second, they put minus? Yeah, minus f of x. Then nabla squared acting on x minus delta of x minus x prime here. Now, here on the boundary, since we know that the Green's function, according to our construction, is equal to zero at the boundary, this is zero. And phi at the boundary is equal to g of x. So as a result, we have the solution. Phi of x prime. So we eliminate delta function here and recover phi of x prime equal to integral over volume g of x comma x prime f of x. We also used the symmetry property, so we can exchange x and x prime in the expression for the Green's function. Dx minus integral over the boundary g of x n dot nabla acting on x. So this is just an operator. This is the normal derivative at the boundary acting on the Green's functions itself. Gx comma x prime ds. So while the Green's function itself, when x belongs to the boundary, is zero, its derivative doesn't need to be zero. So we determined the field phi or the potential knowing the distribution of charges in the bulk and knowing the value of the potential at the boundary. Well, yeah, question. Well, you have to solve this equation for the Green's function, and so that is subject to the condition that g is zero. Well, there may be some methods that are similar to those used in the solution of Laplace equation, but you have specifically to take care of the boundary conditions. Well, in general, it's not a simple problem. So, I unfortunately don't have time to consider the application of this remarkable formula, namely the method of images. But in this case, what one has? One has the boundary that say fills. So we consider the upper half space, right, in three-dimensional space. And our task is to determine the potential in the upper space. So we're not interested in the lower half space. So the question is how to construct the Green's functions that is exactly zero at the boundary. And this is the essence of the method of images. We know this expression. And we know that our Green's function must disappear at the boundary. So we write g x minus x prime equal to 1 over 4 pi. Here we have 1 over square root x minus x prime squared plus y minus y prime squared plus z minus z prime squared, and square root of this. And to make it disappear when z is equal to 0, we will write down 1 over square root of x minus x prime squared plus y minus y prime squared, and plus what? Z plus z prime squared. Here we have z minus z prime, and here we have z plus z prime squared. So when z is equal to zero, Green's function is identically equal to zero. But the nice thing of the method of images is that if you apply minus nabla squared to this term, to the first term, you will recover delta function. But if you apply minus nabla squared to this term, you will get identically zero, because z plus z prime is always positive. You see, it nowhere in the upper space turns to zero. So very often, in order to construct Green's functions for those types of problems, we have to resort to simple guesses. Okay, my friends, that's all for today. I'm sorry for being late.